Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. During this episode, we are listening to NPR's Ron Elving, who recently visited Fort Wayne and gave a lecture asking, "How deep is our commitment to democracy?" Elving will continue in a moment with historical context needed to answer this question. Please enjoy the show.
After the Iraq War, which lost the consensus that it had at the time that it began, with growing inequality in income, which is a long-standing phenomenon, of course, but one that in that old presumption we used to think we were, in some sense or another, addressing, not eradicating, but addressing, making better, improving. And now it became increasingly clear that that was not the case, and that, in fact, income inequality was growing, and growing to the point where it was challenging the Gilded Age of the late 1800s that we all learned about in high school. Also, this technology that keeps working its way into this discussion was beginning to really infiltrate all parts of our lives and to a large degree dictate our social lives. I went back to see my high school when it was time for my reunion, and one of the administrators came out to talk to us, and somebody said, "Is it better or worse being administrator today than it was so many years ago?" And he said, "Oh, much worse." And we said, "Well, what would you change? What kind of help do you need?" And he said, "Get rid of all those devices." You know, people used to pass notes in school. They couldn't pass a note to every kid in the school all at once with one click of one of these. So the technology has really become a dictating monster for our young people's lives and to a large degree for our own. And that has made a lot of changes in our political life as well. And they are, at the very least, disquieting. They are unsettling. They are not the political life, the social life that we used to know. Ultimately, I like to believe that it can be all a tool for bringing us closer together, connecting us better. We certainly aren't going to stop it. The next generation and the next generation are going to take this technology further and further. And then we had the very debilitating experience of the Great Recession of 2008, so-called, an experience that I think also struck the younger people in the country particularly hard. I talked to a lot of young people, students. I have a daughter who's 30, and her cohort of people, they really go back to that 2008 experience, the way for others of us it might have been World War II, it might have been Vietnam. But for them, it's really that 2008 recession. It may not seem like it should be on the same scale, but for them it is, and that's what matters. And that really also has had an effect, a deteriorating effect, on some of our presumptions about how we feel about ourselves as a body politic. So the elections of 2008 and 2016 both produced unexpected results. Different results, but both unexpected. Now think about that. Many Americans were simply not prepared for the outcome of one of those elections or the other, or both. Somewhat different categories of people, perhaps, but there's a great deal of overlap, too. One of the things that political scientists are most fascinated about studying is the substantial number of people, millions of people, who voted twice for Barack Obama and then for Donald Trump. That's an interesting group of people, and we are interested in understanding them as well as we possibly can. That gave rise to, again, more kinds of pushback. In 2009, we called it the Tea Party. 2017, it's generally speaking referred to as the Resistance. But in both cases, there are people reacting to something that they didn't expect to have happen and that on some level they can't quite believe happen, and so on some level they really cannot accept as legitimate. And they're trying to find some magic way to make it disappear or to, in some sense or another, delegitimize it. That definitely is different from most of our history, certainly our most recent post-World War II history, and also kind of undermines that general faith that we've all had, that we were living in a great democracy, the greatest democracy there ever has been, and that faith is getting shaken. So are we really less confident of our system, not just the machinery, not just counting votes, not just keeping people from messing with our campaigns, but the fundamental assumptions that we have a naturally superior system of choosing our government based on democratic principles? Well, There's also a possibility that we're just coming to grips with something here that we didn't want to think about back in those heady days when we thought everything was getting to be better and getting to be better in a really profound way. We're coming to grips with the realization that this is just our latest version, our 21st century version, our own personal version, if you will, our lifetime version of a historic challenge. And are we up to the task of governing ourselves? That's the historic challenge every age has faced. Now, this is a little bit of the research that was released this summer on the 4th of July by the Pew Research Center. This is a nonpartisan research group. They are not affiliated with a party. They have independent funding from some very old money that comes out of the Pennsylvania oil industry. If you want to talk about old, that's what you call old money, back when the oil industry was centered in Pennsylvania. And that's the Pew family's money. And this is one of the many questions that they ask to try to get a grip on how people's attitudes are changing. So let's go straight at it. Is our democracy working? Most people still think it is. But the trend line here is a little bit disturbing. And when you ask people if we need a fundamental design and structure change, maybe moving away from our ideas about democracy, significant changes are needed gets a pretty clear majority. 61%. And that's pretty well distributed. It's true of both parties. You get a majority in both parties. That's a little different. Now, here's another thing to consider. You've seen this map a lot of times. And if I tell you this is the result of the presidential election, it gets a little confusing, doesn't it? We see a couple of blue states. We see a couple of red states. What are all those other states? All those other states are states where did not vote defeated all the other candidates for president. More people did not vote than voted for any given political candidate. You can see how few states that wasn't true. Now, those happen to be the states that historically have had the highest turnout in elections, where more people turn out than in the other states. So I suppose no accident. Those New England states and those upper Midwestern states and Colorado, which is actually kind of a late addition to the historic list of high turnout states, they did have a candidate get more votes. One of the candidates got more votes than the total for those who did not vote. But it's disturbing to me that that is so few. It is disturbing to me that that is so few. Now, you won't ever hear anybody chanting, "We're number 12. Not even Andrew Luck fans. But that's where we are in terms of voter participation in the democracies of the world. Now you can quibble about this list and how they're counting this and how they're counting that. This is a solid list. There's really no way to wiggle out of the fact that 11 other democracies have a higher voter participation than we do, even some of the newest ones. Why don't people vote? Well, there's all kinds of good reasons. I like this first one because I think that this is the closest thing to being a really good answer in the terms of personal integrity, people being honest about it. And I'm not saying that people who say I couldn't because I had to pick up my kid or something like that are not being honest, but people have always had kids. People have always had to deal with getting their kids and to wherever they needed to go and also vote. And more states have so many different times you can vote, and you can vote early, and you can vote by mail, and some of the states you only vote by mail. So a lot of these excuses go away. But I like that first answer because it is a sincere answer of people just saying, I just really don't like the candidates, or I really don't like what they're talking about. It just really doesn't move me, and so I'm not going to go out and vote. Now, bear in mind, the people giving all these reasons, they're registered voters. And a substantial proportion of our country never registers. And I'm talking about eligible voters now. People 18 years of age, non-felons, people who could vote. Now, many of them don't register, and of those who do register, that's the figure you see for voter turnout. When they talk about 55-60% turnout, that's not of the total population. The total vote in the last presidential election was in the 130s of millions. There are 320-some. Million people in this country. So while probably every single person in this room votes and voted in 2016, that's one of the things that sets you apart, and that's what disturbs people who wonder about our future as a democracy. A poll was done by Washington Post and the University of Maryland this summer asked people, have politics in our country reached a new low point? Are we really scraping the bottom here? Or is this just similar to other periods in the past, most periods in the past, when people have had a lot of beefs with each other and other disagreements? Interestingly, 29% said similar to most periods in the past. Okay, all right. I think that's a defensible answer in many respects. 31% said, yes, it's a new low, but it's temporary. I think we're going to get better. But the plurality winner here is yes, and it is the new normal. That was the language they were given as a choice between temporary and the new normal. So 39%, a plurality of those polled, thought that the new normal of our politics is that they're going to be at the low point that they see them at today, that they themselves said they perceive as a low point. Here's another big reason I think people don't vote. They don't think it matters enough to them. They think it matters to somebody, and surely they recognize that it makes a difference in terms of who does what in Washington, and they see all that stuff on TV. But they don't think it really makes a difference to them. It's not that important in their lives. And we have seen again and again, this is why people vote or don't vote, because they see themselves in the outcome. They see some effect in their own personal life, in their own personal situation. They can see that it has some effect here and over there, but your own personal life down here on the bottom, no, not so much. Don't really think it has that much to do with me. And, well, here's the anger. Here's the anger. When people do think about this system, they think about the government, they think about how we choose our leaders, they think, most Americans think, their side, the people that they feel are on their side, are losing. Now, there's an exception here, apparently, for well-educated Democrats. That could mean several things, couldn't it? It could mean that the people who think their side is losing are right, and the well-educated Democrats are the people they think are winning. And whether that's right or whether it's not right, it's what they think. And it has a lot to do with their participation, a lot to do with their degree of political dissatisfaction. The shorthand for it now, and that we all use, is anger. May not be exactly the same emotion in everybody's case, but the shorthand that we use for it is anger. And they're angry at government. And to some degree, I suppose the Democrats have always been seen as the party of government, even when they're not in control of any part of the government, as they're not in the federal system today. But they're still the party of government, and they are still the party that suffers when people feel anger at the government, especially if they see the government as being a creature of the well-educated, the affluent, the well-positioned, people of privilege who have been dictating to them in their own minds and that have caused them to be at a disadvantage. Those people they see as winning as they see themselves as losing. All right, so what is the answer?
We'll have the answer when WBOI Presents returns after a short break. Stay tuned.